Matt, I opened up the Helm pull request queue, and the whole first page was AI submissions from first-time contributors.
Welcome to the Software Madhouse, where building software meets controlled chaos.
Welcome to the podcast. My name is Matt Farina, and I'm one of your co-hosts. I am a software developer, software architect, open source contributor, speaker, author, all those fun things in the open source world, and in product and project development. And my co-host with me today is Robert. Robert, say hi.
Hello, my name is Robert. I am a developer, I'll contribute to open source, help maintain everything Matt said, but I never have been an author. So I guess, Matt, I guess we should probably talk about why we're here and what we're doing and, you know, why I started a new show. So, Matt, what have been your experiences with software development?
So my experience with software is, you know, I've been around a long time and I've just watched change constantly through software, right? I mean, think back 30 years ago and what people were building in the 90s, right? Shortly after the web came out, building client server things, you were in, you know, the early years of things like PHP. And then look how far things have come over the years. We got cloud computing because back then there wasn't even cloud. We got container computing. We got front-end frameworks, browsers that could do a lot more. Now we've got AI on the scene and a whole lot of things in between. It's been nothing but change. And just living through a bunch of that change, watching it happen, experiencing it, has taught me a lot of lessons. And one of the things that I've learned, it's something I think it was Rajiv Pandey, who I used to work with, used to have a thing, ABCD, always be connecting dots. And I think a podcast is a great way to kind of share those experiences and connect some of those dots along the way that can help people going forward and help me share.
And to add to that, I had to update my personal blog that I hadn't touched in like 4 years. And reading what I wrote about then and applying it today is almost night and day. Not because the content is necessarily old, but just seeing how much things have changed along the way in that just that short period of time of neglect that I had in my personal blog. So, Matt, I want to switch up and say, you know, what are we going to be talking about? Now, you talked about the change here, right? And what we've seen and with that around software development. But, you know, what are some of our focus points for that?
So, you know, you and I have done a lot of things over time. Some of it is project development and some of it's product development. You know, what is a product like? Because an open source project, I think, is a little bit different, right? You're building technology. And you're focused on, you know, what is the code? How is it shaped?
If I may interrupt, though.
Oh, please.
For those who don't know, what is the difference there between product and project? Because it gets like, in the, especially in open source, we smash those two terms so much that we might want to set the stage of how we delineate that difference between the two.
Yeah. And so when I look at a product, I look at it as something that comes from a company. It is something you get that's fully packaged. It's got sales, support, whatever else goes along with it, right? Especially like the support cycle. You've got all these other things that surround whatever the functional thing is that give you a full support life cycle, the sales. How does it go out to marketing and teach people about it? It's this whole thing where a project is going to maybe be independent from anybody or maybe part of a foundation. It's focused on just the functional thing and not the go-to-market and everything else around it. And it may only give you the latest things, right? Like if you look at something like Helm, the releases are just the latest. We're not concerned with things like LTS, long-term support, or any of those things, which are kind of They're kind of those concerns when you get into enterprise and things like that. And we leave that to product development organizations to take the project and then build out the extra. So we can stay focused on the new, the interesting, the development of it, while a product gives you a whole lot of other things around it. Does that, can you add to that and maybe give your take on project versus product?
I I think when I said earlier that we kind of mush it and mash it all together, it's because in the world of open source, a lot of times products are downstream of a project. And when you look at it, there's very little feature difference. There's very little difference between the two. And it's confusing at times for people who don't understand when they're hearing something coming from, you know, like the CNCF versus something that's coming from a company. It kind of gets, you know, melded in there. So I'm glad that we made a delineation between, you know, how we see projects and how we see, you know, products. And I love the fact that on the project side, we don't have to really worry about LTSS because that's not like our bag. Like we just, hey, is it working? Here's the latest one. Is it patched? Is there no CVEs right now? I say right now, then good, let's just ship it. And it's much less stressful than the product side at times.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think we will talk about both. So then we can get into some of those things beyond software development, which I think are useful for people to know. As somebody who's, you know, spent a lot of time working on the engineering side of things when it comes to building something, learning how marketing takes that out and explains things, I think is really useful to know. Knowing how sales takes it out and maybe brings things back, I think these kinds of other things can help with, you know, what somebody has to do with a product because they can make a better product.
Understood completely. So one of the other things that this podcast or show will be about is something I mentioned earlier and Matt's mentioned is open source, right? We talked about Helm, we talked about other things. It's not a Helm show, but we will be talking about, you know, building projects that are resilient to the industry shifts, right? Like VC companies shifting their direction and how does that affect projects in the field? Matt, what else would we talk about when it comes to the open source?
Yeah, I mean, we might talk about the chaos that AI is bringing to what's going on, what kind of havoc that's playing in the open source space, whether it's the scaling issues that GitHub is having because they're seeing so many more new repositories and PR contributions. It's actually turned into a scaling problem for them, to, you know, what it does to maintainers. So I think there's a lot we can talk around with an open source from how you develop something, make it resilient, and just the kinds of characteristics that are happening.
Understood. Understood. Yeah. So do we want to, I think you've touched on something here, right? So if we want to talk about, you know, AI and open source, right? You just mentioned that GitHub's getting bombarded. They're having to scale because they're going to a whole next level. What are you seeing in the open source ecosystem right now with AI coming in and kind of, I don't want to say beating it up, but, you know, as we opened, you know, you can go to any open source project right now and you go to that PR queue and you can look through and there's a lot of first time contributors, which is good. It's also bad.
Yeah. And I think, you know, let's talk about that AI open source fire hose, right? We both maintain open source, right? Mm-hmm. Like Kubernetes Helm project. And that AI impact is, I mean, it's a real impact on what we do. So let's start by, let me ask you, you know, you've been showing up at the Helm queue, the PR queue, the issue queue. What are your experiences lately in maintaining Helm since the rise of the AI PRs that have come on the scene?
So we're over inundated at the moment with first time contributors with AI assistance, right? And it's good because we're seeing an uptick in people contributing, right? Because we can't complain that we don't have contributors and then turn around and complain about it when we're in. But on the flip side of it, because of how Helm sits in the world, there's contextual knowledge that AI doesn't understand because it looks at Helm. It doesn't understand necessarily Kubernetes and its relationship. So what I've seen is a lot of things and I'm like, oh, let's see what this does. And then I'll run it. And I'm like, hey, it's going to break these types of charts or whatever. And so when I test it, it pulls me away from, you know, actually doing something meaningful because I'm getting the slop in, which someone thinks it's fixing something, but they don't have all the context, all of the use cases. You know, as I've done testing, I have a pretty large little suite of tests that when I do my regression for every pull request, and a lot of them can't get past that because I know if I let it through, we're going to break customers. And I mean customers like For Helm, for context for everybody out there, anytime it's Helm and customers, it's our end users, right? And we know ever break them. Like it is sacrilege in our team to break end users. So when we protect that at all costs. So I'm seeing a lot of that right now. And I think what it's doing is starting to close the community down because I'm not getting to PRs of people I know because I'm pulling off the top of the list. I'm going through, but there's so many that I don't know that good contributions are just not getting. I'm not. We're not. We don't have enough time to get to them, even when we use AI tooling, because there's only so far it can go. Because again, that relationship between Kubernetes and Helm.
Yeah. So what I really think you touched on was a few concrete problems that we're seeing, right? With open source projects all over the place are seeing, right? There's the drive-by pull requests, by an increasing number of people who have no real association with the project. And one of the things that I noticed, because I've started to go look at people who do this, they might make over the course of a week, contributions to 50 or 100 different projects using AI across different languages that have no relation to each other, right? It's not like they're Kubernetes people trying to do something to Kubernetes projects. They may just be all over the place. So they don't have that association, that care for the project. Sometimes I wonder if they're just playing with AI. Some of them are more meaningful with it, but some of them, you wonder if they're just playing with AI, looking for easy things in open source. But in any case, you can tell they don't have the care for the project, right?
I don't want to say they don't have the care. I think what we've done is it's a consequence of the gamification that we have within our ecosystem, right? So people who contribute, they get, their GitHub bars has more green things in it, and then there's dev stats, and we put this high emphasis on any type of contribution, not just, valuable ones. Now you only get it if you quote unquote, if it's pull request is accepted and it goes through, but it becomes a numbers game, right? It's like you throw a million out there because AI can do it for you, and you hope, a tenth of a percent go through, and you're still ahead of anybody else because the system is kind of set up to really encourage this type of behavior because it was set up prior to, what we have with AI.
Yeah, and yeah, so it's that quantity, not quality, and that's where it's getting people is the quantity. But that actually gets into the quality, and you touched on that as well, I think, right? We're seeing a fair amount of what I would call slop quality, and it's joked there's AI slop that's out there, and even as the AI models get better, some of it is they don't know that undocumented intent, right? You've got that test suite you run, things like that. And, they don't necessarily know some of the Kubernetes-isms that aren't documented in the project. And some of that is maybe on the projects, they're not documented enough for the AI agents, or the AI agent is, targeted at too narrow of a scope when they go to do something. But we end up with this slop quality in a lot of the pull requests.
Yeah, and I said earlier, it kind of feels that we're closing off the community because I can't get to it. And so I think AI is good and AI and open source is good. I think we need to rethink our way of doing said pull requests with our communities.
Yeah, and this is enough of a problem that, I went looking. There's actually published academic papers on this, and some of the news outlets have already started to pick up some of these published things and write news articles on it. So now this has been happening long enough that they're studying it, they're seeing the effects on it. I remember there was one somewhere where, is AI killing open source? Was one of the questions that was even being asked. Based on just what's happening to the projects and how they're being treated. So maybe a good thing to do is we can start talking about how projects are responding today to talk a little bit about some of the things people are doing, right? We see the problem. What's going on here?
So I have inadvertently, and I think this was like my personal natural response to the slop, is I kind of have I don't want to say a list of favorites, because you only do that with your kids. You can only have favorites there. In the community, you can't really have favorites. Is really the people I see who come to our developer meeting, I prioritize, right? Because they're committing. I know there's a human back there. They're only using AI, so I'm not upset about it. But I go, Ben's here. I see Ben. Ben had a PR. He's probably going to ask about it. And so there's this natural favoritism that's coming through. And it's not because I'm malicious to anybody else, but if someone's taking the time to bolt to a pull request, come to the Thursday meeting, say, hey, here's what I'm doing. Here's why I did it. Here's the test suites, questions. I'm more inclined to look at that now than getting to the drive-by PRs.
And I think that actually highlights something the Kubernetes community is doing right now. You know, they want their interactions to be person to person. They don't want, you know, AI showing up doing their interactions on pull requests, things like that. They want it to be real people to the point where they've, you know, encoded it. There's a blog post where they talk about it. They've got, you know, direction for how this is going to work. Give me human written commit messages and human written interactions on these things, even when your tooling does stuff, right? And I think that gets into you're doing something, and I wonder if more places need to make it a policy. Like Kubernetes now has an AI policy, and the CNCF CLA, that's Contributor License Agreement Checker, actually make sure co-authors are real people who've signed it and it's real humans interacting with each other, even when they're using AI as a tool along the way. And they've turned that into a policy. So when Slop comes in and they're not interacting, it doesn't follow the policy. You can actually close it and just move on, right?
And I think that needs to be probably need to be communicated a little better, right? Because I don't think people realize what they're doing. I think it's just they're playing the numbers game, they're getting it up, and they're pushing it through. Now, I think you and I talk all the time. We joke that I talk to you more than I talk to my wife. And I th you mentioned something that Ghosty does something similar, but what they have is, and maybe you can kind of elaborate on it because you were the one who told me about it. I thought it was an interesting concept, is that they have like your cool list, right? Remember that meme? It's like F you, F you, F you, you're cool, I'm out. But they have that your cool list. And can you kind of elaborate on how they're doing it over there and how that's somewhat different, but not?
So Ghosty, Mitchell Hashimoto, who created Ghosty, he created a project called Vouch. And Vouch basically says if you're on the list, you can vouch for somebody not on the list to join the list. And then they can say who's been vouched to be in. And everybody else, their issues and pull requests are automatically closed, you know, with a message telling them what needs to happen. But if you're on the list, then you can play. And so it's open source, but it's actually a very closed community for people who are vouched to be part of it. And then you've got to basically, through the association of humans, earn your way in.
Would you say it's closed or it's a community, but it has a little more rules before you just show up? Like I would argue that I don't think it's necessarily closed. I mean, they'll let anybody in. I just think that they have a strict policy on being vouched for. Like he's cool. Like, like you
Yeah.
go to the bouncer at the club and I know he's with me. He's cool. I promise you. It's the same. It means the same thing.
And then they're not going to be inundated with these drive-by issues. The maintainers show up and they know that if it's not somebody who's vouched for, it's not going to be on the list of things they have to deal with. And so they've gone that route, and it's a human to human thing, right? They're definitely using AI tools. Mitchell has, you know, shown off how he's using AI tools and how that's changed over time, right? He's actually publicly experimented with and showed people how to do this. It's just that. But that's not the only tool out there that people are using to kind of deal with vouching. There's another, there are other things, like there's something called Good Egg, which kind of does something similar. But what it does is instead of being vouched for, like you may not know who to vouch for in your small community, but you want to, you know, have other people do it. They'll actually look at your GitHub contributions, score them, And then say, is this person actually somebody who's showing up in good faith trying to do something? Or is it one of these spammers who's going up? It'll actually calculate a contribution score and say, okay, this person's okay because their score hits a certain threshold and lets it through. Otherwise, it deals with it. And then there are other tools out there trying to do this. But I think what we're seeing is automation trying to make that process easier on the humans who show up so they don't have to filter this stuff out in the first place. It's pre-filtered by automation using different criteria.
That's interesting. So, using AI to review or even recommend which PRs to deal with in which way. Your thoughts on this? Is that, is that something I think that could kind of get me up, that can kind of put up some blockers and clearing for maintainers to know what to
Yeah, I
review
mean,
or not?
I do that. I say, AI, go look at this project. Here's the criteria that I want you to look for. And it might change. If I've got a short period of time and I want to review some easy ones, I'll say, give me this. But I give it the criteria for what I'm looking for. And I say, give me a list of, open pull requests to go look at, to go review. And then I'll review those. Because it can generate that list very nicely for me and even read through the details in some of these things, right? And so that's helped me find the right ones to prioritize and just skip the slop or skip those things without having to put in that initial review time. So I found that to be useful.
Now, we know that a lot of open source happens on GitHub, right? And GitHub has now a number where we're capping the number of open PRs from any one contributor who doesn't have write access, which that is an interesting approach, and I'm not sure how I feel about it because I think it can be abused if not implemented correctly.
Absolutely. I mean, if somebody's coming and dropping 20 or 30, pull requests on a project, and that's something that we experienced on Helm at one point. We had four or five accounts come in and just drop a whole lot of pull requests. And if we had this cap, that would have stopped it at the time. And so I think there's something to that because if you're coming in with all of these changes, is this what's the goal there? How is it going? If they want to do more, maybe show up and get some of their first ones merged before, creating any more, right? And I think it gives them that control from the spam bots that are coming in, doing hundreds of them to a project or doing lots, 50 changes to a project with open pull requests all within a day. That kind of throttles that particular case because, if you set the number at, say, 20 or 30, somebody can still have a realistic number of contributions, but you stop the spam AI that comes in and wrecks a project. And we have seen cases where that's happened. So I think it's got a very particular use case when used right. If you really limit it down, then that's just one of the controls. But even when I was looking around, I found there's other things you can add, kind of like Vouched or Good Egg, that will take how long you've been contributing to a project, how many things you've had merged to the project, and allow your pull request size to grow over time. So maybe initially you can only do something that's a 20 or 30 line change. And then as you contribute more things, your ability to do larger ones grows. So people, I think, are coming up with lots of different angles to kind of handle this AI mess coming in. This just happens to be one that GitHub put together for us.
So we talked a lot about the cloud native side. I don't want to say we're partial to it, but we kind of are. But there's also the Linux side. And culturally, for people who don't know it, not all open source is culturally the same. So Linux communities and cloud native are not the same. So what's going on with the Linux side of the world, especially around the kernel, with this inundation of AI and contributions?
Yeah, so the Linux side, which has started to, deal with AI developed changes, and Linus himself has even done that. They've actually looked at how do they track some of it, right? So while they're trying to do things, and I've read that their Git server is at a minimum running 20% CPU all the time, serving up Git, and a lot of it is AI automation, just pulling the Linux source code down now, right? And the bottom is 20. The top is much higher than that for their server that deals with just serving their Git source. They've started to look at and say, okay, when you do something, just like with the developer's certificate of origin, that DCO, you have a signed off by, they're adding an assisted by in your commit message so you can list the LLMs that assisted you. And that's one of the things they want to know is declare what's going on. Because I think in what they're doing, they're trying to assess what's the impact of the LLM. Yeah, go ahead and do it. But what LLMs are you using and to what extent? Because once that ends up in the commit messages, then they can start to assess, here's what LLMs are doing, here's how they're doing things. Because I think when you have that better insight into what's going on, you can start to make decisions about where do we go to help satisfy those use cases a little bit better. And that's what that helps them do. So it's not so much a gate, but it's a signal to help them understand what's happening so then they can adapt as things move forward. And that's one of the interesting things about what Linux is doing.
Interesting. Interesting.
Well,
I'm saying.
and you got to think, Linux doesn't use pull requests. It still uses patches emailed around. So you're not going to get inundated with pull requests. They would get inundated with emails that go through spam filters and things like that, right?
Yes, it's just a different mechanism to
It
fulfill
is.
the same
Yeah.
requirements, right? So it's just like, oh,
Absolutely.
it's an email instead of, so it's kind of different, which is interesting because you can have it sign off by a particular LLM until we get to the home labbers catching up and running their own LLMs at home using that. So I think that there's an interesting, I think we're getting there because I used to do a lot of work with people who run home labs and building content around what they're doing. I think it's only a matter of time before we're going to see LLMs helping with that contribution ran right next to your laptop at home.
I actually have a machine next to my laptop at home that runs local LLM sometimes and does some work for me like that. So that'll definitely be a future episode because I look forward to talking about that.
I know you were. That's. I didn't want to. Like, I knew you were going to shamelessly plug the work you're going to go do over there. So, is the AI fire hose going to kill open source? No, I don't think so. I don't even think it is. I think what it's going to enhance it. I think we're just having to adjust to this new reality, and I think we're in this adjustment period of, what does that look like, moving forward.
It does. And if you think about it, open source has been around for, well more than 3 decades, 4 decades. It's been around a long time and things have changed a lot along the way. I mean, when I first started contributing to open source, people were using CVS for their central systems and then SVN, before Git even existed. And there were other systems alongside that. But and then the tools you use, the issue trackers, there's just been a lot of change over time. Right. I've worked on projects where you emailed patches or you passed patch files around to be applied. And we've just over time, we figured out new automation, new ways to handle things. And I think the AI era is just going to bring out some innovation. And we're kind of storming, norming, R&Ding what that looks like right now.
Sure.
But we'll eventually get to some good, various different ways of handling it. And we'll keep moving forward.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you very much. This has been a delightful time. If you like this video, please hit the like button below. Comment if you have an opinion that you'd like to share with us and the rest of the world, and hit the subscribe button. Thank you guys, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.